Today on Straight Talk Africa is about the book Beyond the Storm, written by Dr. William Close, an American physician who goes to the Belgian Congo for 6 weeks on a missionary assignment and stays for 16 years. He cared for the powerless and the powerful, including Marshal Mobutu Sese Seko, who ruled Zaire for 32 years. His Congolese protege, Dr. Malonga Miyatudila, contributed to the book. He is perhaps best known as one of the world's foremost experts on Ebola and was on the team which discovered the virus in 1976. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to you, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion about Beyond the Storm, a book written by Dr. William Close, an American physician who cared for the powerless and powerful, including Marshal Mobutu Sese Seko himself, who ruled Zaire for 32 years.
Well, there's so much to say and cover in this hour. Coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share your thoughts on our topic du jour. That's through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. That's ahead on Straight Talk Africa. Hope you'll stay with us.
But first, VOA's Paul Sisko reports on the book Beyond the Storm, Treating the Powerless and the Powerful in Mobutu's Congo Zaire.
Beyond the Storm by Dr. William Close is part autobiography. It is also the story of Congo's independence from Belgium and the story of a corrupt and brutal dictator's rise and fall. Dr. Close arrived in Kinshasa in May 1960, weeks before the nation regained independence. After 75 years of colonial rule, Belgium turned power over to Patrice Lumumba, the Congo's first prime minister. The newly named Democratic Republic of Congo was free, and chaos erupted. These were very new beginnings for American Dr. Close, a volunteer surgeon at the hospital in Kinshasa, and for newly appointed Army Chief of Staff Joseph Mobutu. Their lives were entwined for the next 16 years. After months of civil strife with clandestine support from the West, Lumumba was arrested and deposed by Colonel Mobutu, Lumumba, a victim of the Cold War. Mobutu seized power in 1965 and ruled harshly for 32 years. He nationalized the mining industry, took massive loans from the West. Despite Western backing, Mobutu fled into exile in 1997. The book Beyond the Storm, written with Dr. Malonga Miyatudila, tells of what they call the tragedy of Mobutu and the destructive moral transformation that led to his demise.
Town Hall on Ebola.
The doctors also co-authored another book, Ebola Through the Eyes of the People. It's about the discovery of the Ebola virus, and it analyzes their successful battle against it in 1976. Miyatudila appeared on a town hall by the Voice of America.
We have had 25 outbreaks.
Dr. Close died in 2009. Dr. Miyatudila, born in the DRC, is a renowned public health specialist and one of the world's foremost experts on the Ebola virus. In Beyond the Storm, subtitled Treating the Powerless and the Powerful in Mobutu's Congo and Zaire, the reader gets a first-hand psychological account of President Mobutu's rise, erratic dictatorship, and fall. The Democratic Republic of Congo has repeatedly seen its leadership succumb to the observations of Lord Acton, that power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Dr. Close's life story is a tribute to the Congolese people he cared for and loved. His revelations about Mobutu and the Congo's stormy history bring consideration and concern for the powerless and the powerful in the DRC today. Paul Sisko, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Joining us here in our Washington studios is our distinguished guest, Dr. Malonga Miyatudila, a protege of Dr. William Close and a senior public health specialist, international consultant. We invited Glenn Close, daughter of Dr. William Close and Hollywood actress, for her comments about her father's book, but a filming assignment in Scotland has kept her from joining us today. Well, once again, I have to say, Dr. Malonga, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you again on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you for having me here.
You're most welcome, sir. Mm-hmm. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guest. The number to call is 202-619-3111. Your country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Doctor. You contributed to this great book.
Yes, I did. Actually, I'm the promoter. It's me who asked Dr. Close to please write that book to make a testimony on his stay in Congo.
Yeah, in fact, he says William too close, MD, with Malonga Mia Tudla, MD, MPH. Why did he occasionally refer to you as Miat?
Yeah, because my name is has been shortened by for the reason that you can imagine. It was some people thought that it was too long. So Miat is a friendly way to deal with me.
But probably not as complicated as some might tell you when it comes to Polish names. Zbigniew Brzezinski, former Jimmy Carter National Security Advisor, for example.
I don't think it's a very long name, but for some reason, some people say that Miat was more friendly. It's like instead of saying William, we say Bill. Instead of saying Robert, we say Bob. So same technique.
It's a very interesting book, and I have to frankly tell you that being a child that had maternal parents from the Congolese-Ugandan border, I was intrigued by the fact that at one time, the Belgian Congo actually had perhaps one of the best healthcare systems on the continent.
I can confirm that. I'm trying to see a country in Africa, in sub-Saharan Africa, which had a better health system than Belgian Congo. So far, I've not found. Because in those days, even people from South Africa used to come to Elizabethville, which is now Lubumbashi, or even Kinshasa, to be treated. So really, that's true. Belgian Congo had I would say the best. I'm still waiting to be told that I'm wrong, but so far I still believe that the Belgian Congo had the best health system in Africa.
Well, I have news for you, Doctor. It wasn't only South Africans coming to the Congo. My own maternal parents and relatives living in a place called Busanza used to go to a hospital called Rwankuba. That's where they used to receive their treatment.
Mm-hmm. Rwankuba, it's a missionary hospital.
A missionary hospital.
In the eastern part of Congo, and it's still there.
Does it look like today?
It is still functioning. That's also the other thing about the system that the system that was put in that place. This system has been resilient. It has been going and throughout all the problems that the country had, the health system had survived.
Very interesting. And what was even more interesting about that is that one did not need a visa, for example, to come from my maternal parents' house or home to cross to go to Rwankuba. As a matter of fact, even their banana plantations, cows and goats and what have you, were, for all practical purposes, frankly, in the Congo.
I'm ashamed to say that the visa issue was something that we Africans invented after we became independent. In those days, it was easy to go from Leopoldville to Brazzaville, to cross from Goma to Kisenyi. People used to walk. But unfortunately, when we became independent, we changed our mind and we started building walls.
I thought the wars began when Europeans sat in Berlin around 1884-85 under the chairmanship of Prince Bismarck, the German chancellor, and started essentially dividing Africa among themselves without a single African present on that table.
That's the history, but we could have corrected these mistakes if they were mistakes. Why did we build real walls after independence? Because as I said before, mm-hmm. it was very easy to go from Bangui to Congo, or to go from Elizabethville to Cape Town or to Zambia. I'm ashamed to say that as an African that if that was a mistake made in Berlin, we cannot be excused of putting walls now. I remember when they going to the border between Togo and Ghana, I was so ashamed of being African. I see a border not larger than a road, a small road, and the border between Ghana and Togo was closed. And I saw with my own eyes people from the same family talking across the border.
You know, there was obviously a visionary African leader from the Republic of Ghana, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah himself, the Osagyefo, the Redeemer. This man, when he regained the political independence from the British in 1957, he actually offered Ghana to become a nucleus for a United States of Africa. And what do you get in 1963? A compromise of the Organization of African Unity. And now you have the African Union. Why do we retain these artificial boundaries, really? These borders, frankly, which are very artificial in the sense that they really don't serve a purpose for ourselves. They're not in our interest, really.
They are not.
They serve someone else's interest.
That's true.
Very true.
Those are something that hopefully the younger generations are going to correct.
I see. Now, let's talk again about Beyond the Storm. The author, the main author, Dr. Claus, he writes that he actually goes on a 6 weeks assignment to the Congo in May 1960, and he stays there for the next 16 years. What exactly happened?
Yes, he was invited by a local chief from the Kasai region. He was invited because in those days he was working for the Rearmament Moral,
right?
NGO based in Switzerland.
Yes.
So the organization invited the Rearmament Moral to come and try to bring peace between the two groups of Lubas who were fighting and killing each other in the Kasai region.
Mm-hmm.
The fight or the war was ignited by the Belgians before the independence. So there were a lot of...
Very interesting. So the Congo, of course, becomes independent, June 1960.
Mm-hmm. There were some ethnic problems created, artificially created by the Belgians. They did the same thing in the Rwanda. These are the time where the Belgium actually started this fight between the Tutsi and the Hutus. They did the same thing in the Katanga, and then in the Kasai. So the Rama Moral, for which Dr. Claus was working, was invited to come. But when Dr. Claus came to Kinshasa, he resigned from the Rearmament Moral and decided to work for the Mamayemo Hospital.
Mamayemo Hospital, for what the general, was it called
for
before?
The Kinshasa General Hospital.
And there was only one doctor, I remember, as far as the book was concerned at that time.
Yeah, I told that the system was good, but the roots were not very good.
I see. Well, Now we will pause for a short break, and we would like to remind you that Street Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Beyond the Storm. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githy Ewart. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. Let me come to you, Doctor, the good doctor. You get independence June 1960. Mm-hmm. You have a prime minister called Patrice Emery Lumumba. Mm-hmm. And in a very short time, in probably less than 6 months...
Six days.
6 days.
Mm-hmm.
6 days, he loses power.
Yeah.
He's dismissed by Kasavubu, President Kasavubu.
Later on. Yeah, because the main problem was created by his speech. He was not supposed to speak on that day on June the 30th.
Right.
But he grabbed the microphone and made a speech that really angered the colonial Belgium. And the speech was also made in front of the king. So that was lèse majesté. And because of that, the Belgian decided that this guy should be removed. And then they look for assistance, help from the United States. They got the assistance, and this is what happened.
He becomes a victim of the Cold War.
He became a victim of the Cold War.
The author talks about how, for example, the speech given by the king, really, was so patronizing and paternalistic to the Congolese.
It was very bad for us, very bad taste. And then
the one given by President Kasavubu.
Well, President Kasavubu didn't even respond to the speech, because he just talked to the people. And Lumumba couldn't support that, so he read a speech. Unfortunately, that was also prepared by some Belgians who were against the king.
The speech.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the fact that it was being edited by perhaps? Congolese first university graduate, Thomas Kanza.
No, Thomas Kanza didn't want him to read that speech on that day. He advised him against reading that.
Uh-huh.
But let's remember, Lumumba was 35. He was young.
Yes.
And you know how young people behave.
Yes.
So he did that.
What about a young Joseph Desire Mobutu? Who also, it seems to me, had in fact a part in that speech.
No Congolese was part in that speech, that I can assure you. The speech was written in Belgium by Belgians who are really against the king.
Mm-hmm.
It was sent to him. Thomas Kanza reviewed the speech and advised Lumumba not to read it, at least on that day. Because he could have had many other opportunities to do that, but Lumumba was so angered by the king's speech that he said, "I have to read this."
Then, of course, what follows is an army mutiny.
The army mutiny is something different that the Belgians used to put problems in the Congo. Uh-huh. Because what the civilians have not done before the June 30th was to have a plan for the Congolization of the army. Mm-hmm. Because up to that day, all the officers were Belgians.
Correct.
So now, after the day following the independence, the 1st of July, mm-hmm. soldiers went to the parade, and then they said that nothing had changed for them.
Correct.
Because the day before, they saw Kasavubu and Lumumba taking the place of the white people. And then they said, what about us? 5 days later, they will get the answer from their Belgian general. I've met with the authorities, meaning the Congolese authorities.
Yes.
They have told me to tell you this. Before the independence equals after independence, meaning there's no chance for you. That is the reason why the soldiers decided to go. And they wanted also their independence.
Then how does a Prime Minister Lumumba promote a Joseph Désiré Mobutu to the rank of colonel and become the new chief of staff?
So the civilians authorities, I mean the Congolese, who were not soldiers, they were surprised by the mutiny. So they have to find an answer. Lumumba thought that a good option would be to promote some Congolese. And then he proposed some names, but the names were not accepted. Mm-hmm. And Mobutu offered himself to be in the negotiate to do the negotiation between the civilians authority and the mutineers, because he had been in the army. He was in the army from 1952 to 1957.
The colonial army.
The colonial army.
With the rank of sergeant.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So he played a role in alleviating the problem. And to...
He was a little bit sophisticated.
Yeah, he was.
He had actually been a journalist. What kind of journalist was he?
What kind of...
Journalist.
That's a program itself.
Was he a military journalist? I mean, it is in the book.
Yeah, he was a journalist officially, but I think he was working for the Belgian security, because his role, even before the independence, was
like an intelligence informer?
Intelligence informer for the army.
But he seems to be very, very close to some very important names associated with the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, in Brussels back in Kinshasa.
That will happen later on, because he was so good working with the Belgian security, and the colonial first and the Belgian. Then after that, he was recruited. His name was proposed to the CIA through Mr. Tempelsmann, another Belgian.
The diamond tycoon,
yeah,
in New York City.
Yeah, so you know, Belgian, naturalized American, and then, so these type of connections. This is how he was recruited.
Beyond the Storm refers to him as a Belgian Jew.
Yeah.
Interesting. Now,
remember, Mr. Tempelsmann will become an American. Right?
An American citizen, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And then he's going to...
influence a lot of administrations here, in fact, including the Bill Clinton administration.
He will become also the husband of Mrs. Boyfriend.
Jackie Onassis Kennedy.
You can imagine the type of connection that you're going to have with the Democratic Party in the U.S.
And he's also, according to some sources, very close to Ewan Madeleine Albright, of course, who became Clinton's Secretary of State.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So these are the linkages.
Those are the linkages. Mm-hmm. So who actually killed Lumumba? Because I remember watching a movie and even reading this book whereby you have a Colonel Mobutu.
Mobutu was not there.
Going to, in fact, talk to then Prime Minister Patrice Lumumba. And he sends his soldiers, according to this book, to arrest him.
Lumumba was not arrested while he was in his house. He was asked to stay in Kinshasa in his house.
And he tried to escape, to go to Kisangani.
He decided to escape, to go to Kisangani, to join the group that was not very happy with his demise. And then they wanted to start the legitimate government from Kinshasa, Kisangani.
Yes.
And then the army, of course, was sent to arrest him.
They arrested him and they sent him to Katanga.
And then he was arrested and then brought back to Kinshasa.
And then
they were trying to find a place where you can put him in such a way that he's not going to harm the country anymore. First, he was sent to Tisville, Banzangungu now.
What is that?
Banzangungu is in the Bakongo.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Bakongo, he started creating some problems.
That is the birthplace of Thomas Kanza.
With the soldiers. Mm-hmm. And then the commander-in-chief of that camp said, I don't want Lumumba in my camp. Take it anywhere you want. This is when a decision was taken to take him to Katanga.
Katanga.
Kasai or Katanga.
To Moise Tshombe.
Moise Tshombe.
A man who was
and
very closely linked
Tshombe,
to the Belgians.
People didn't ask his advice. They didn't ask his okay. They just sent him to Katanga. And he will be killed 2 days after his arrival in Katanga.
Who killed him? From what you know? Because from the book?
He was killed by a group of policemen or something, policemen under the command of a Belgian officer.
Are you suggesting that Mobutu had no involvement in this?
In the killing, in the actual killing. Oh,
directly or indirectly?
No, he was not directly involved.
But directly and indirectly?
Probably indirectly.
Probably? Yeah. You mean up to now you don't know?
He had interest of him being disappeared, yeah, of course, but he didn't push for him to be killed. I don't believe that.
And then his body was burnt.
The body was burnt
with the acid.
Mm-hmm.
It is interesting.
But the decision was taken from outside the country,
both inside and outside. There has to be a dynamic.
There was a dynamic. You know, when somebody asked me who killed Lumumba, I said, please answer to me, who killed Jesus Christ?
Really?
Now, if you give me the answer to that question, then I can give you the answer to the question of who killed Lumumba. Because it was a long chain of command. So to me, if you ask me the question, we have to find who
killed Jesus Christ. What about Pilato?
Yes, if Pilato is the one who killed Jesus, then we have to find who is the Pilate who killed
interest
Lumumba.
Whose interest he was representing? I see. Well, you're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more discussion in a moment. But first, here is Maria Majero. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders. They are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them. Today, not tomorrow. So let's connect. Let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known.
It's Upfront every Wednesday, 1730 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is Straight Talk Africa on The Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui Ewart, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Today, we look at the book, Beyond the Storm, Treating the Powerless and the Powerful in Mobutu's Congo Zaire. The book details the extraordinary experiences during the uncontrollable human storms that crashed repeatedly in the former Zaire, now Democratic Republic of Congo, after independence. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, asking, what memories do you have of the now DRC before and after independence was granted? Well, starting off the conversation is a listener from Tanzania with our letter of the week.
Manny Alcado Cassie from Tanzania writes, just like most African countries, the DRC was rich before independence and it's still rich right now. Its people were peaceful and they still want that kind of life today. Everything changed with Belgium's failure to fully prepare the country for its independence and subsequently the egoistic desires of powerful people in government. This current unrest in the country is manifested by the fact that most high government officials are there to trade valuable metals and other countries' riches for their own profit.
Well, that was Mani Alcado Cassi, a teacher at Mpanda Katavi in Tanzania. Before we move on to more of your comments, let me thank you, thank everyone for using all our social media platform to communicate with us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Just use the hashtag VOA Beyond the Storm. And if you haven't yet, do follow us on Twitter. Speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Emmanuel Kachele, who says, before independence, Congo was rich. It's still rich, but all these riches are helpless to the people. Another tweet from Upano Godfrey, who writes, I remember the brutal exit of Mobutu Sese Seko, how he was treated, died, and buried in a foreign country. Well, now to a comment from our Facebook page. This one is from Arinda Alberto from Mukono in Uganda, who writes, most memories come in after independence. Before independence, the Belgians had succeeded in dividing a once united Congo, where peace and tranquility prevailed. With the granting of independence, giving birth to anarchy in the Katanga province, this went on to affect development of the DRC, even up to now. Well, Shaka and Professor, your take on these comments.
It's all yours, Doc. Your reaction.
Yeah, I think I agree with everybody, especially with the first one. The main problem with Congo was that the Belgians didn't prepare Congolese to independence.
Is there any colonial power that prepared any country for independence?
Yeah, but maybe the Belgians did that the best.
Really?
Yeah. Apart from the Portuguese,
they had the health care.
So they put systems that were working, I would say, perfectly, but with very very little involvement of Congolese. This is why, when mutiny started in July 7, 1960, 7 days after independence, everything collapsed. There were not a single Congolese doctor. Not a single Congolese, you name it, economist, you name it.
We'll come to that later. Let's go to another comment, of course, Mariama, if you don't mind, from Facebook Global World.
Absolutely. We'll move on to Yahya Ahmed Gumel from Jigawa in Nigeria, who writes, before independence, Congo was known as a nation of peace, unity, and cooperation, which put the country on the path to speedy progress and development. After independence, however, the political imbroglio that quickly descended on the country changed the impressive outlook, replacing it with fear, hatred, and bloody conflicts that have ravaged the once united nation. And we're going to end with a comment from Mai Gidi. He's writing to us from Burko in Somalia, who only wrote two words about the memories he has about the DRC before and after independence. And those two words, he's talking about Patrice Lumumba, the former Congolese independence leader. And, of course, you just touch on it a lot. But once again, I'm going to let you just weigh in on these comments.
Yes.
Go. Yes. Let me now react to the comments by my friend, my brother from Nigeria. He said before the independence and after independence, maybe some little correction. The fight started before the independence, as I was saying before. When the Belgium found out that the independence was coming anyway, so they started putting fires here and there. I say that they started dividing the Lubas. So starting around May 60, a very, very, I would say, war, let's call it that.
Divide and rule.
Started between the Lubas from the center and the Lubas from the west. The Lubas from Mbujimayi and the Lubas from Kananga. People died by scores before the independence. This is why Dr. Close was invited and his group was invited. Same thing happened in Lubumbashi. So they didn't wait for independence to come to start. So they started the crisis.
I see. Well, thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, thank you, Shaka, and thank you, Doctor. That will do it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. If you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. Or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Just go to the VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Well, now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, Joyce Banda, the former president of Malawi, will discuss what Africa can learn from the U.S. elections and the powerful transition of power from one leader to another. That's right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back to a discussion about Beyond the Storm, a book written by Dr. William Close, an American physician who cared for the powerless and the powerful, including Marshal Mobutu Sese Seko himself, who ruled Zaire for 32 years. Our distinguished guest is Dr. Malonga Miyatudila, a protege of Dr. Close and senior health specialist, international consultant. We invited Glenn Close, daughter of Dr. William Close and Hollywood actress for her comments about her father's book, but her agent tells us she's on a filming assignment in Scotland. Well, once again, Dr. Mia Tidler, I have to say I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you again on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, thank you.
You're most welcome. You know, tell me this question. There are people who say that Congolese were better off during colonialism than they are after, in fact, they regained their political independence. True?
That's true.
But how can it be true when even in this book and history tells us that Congo began as a personal property of the King of Belgium, Leopold II.
For 15 years.
And committed incredible crimes, was in fact cutting off people's hands for not meeting perhaps the quotas required in tapping rubber.
That's true. That's true, but that was true also. We are talking about a period where really humanity was a scarce commodity. While Leopold II was cutting people's hands in Congo, French were cutting heads in West Africa, and the Germans were committing the first genocide
in
Namibia.
And the president
so,
Namibia.
And I'm sorry to say that in those days, in this country, people were lynching black people. So we are talking about a different period.
Would it be fair to call that as terrorism?
That's really a very...
the African people?
That's a very bad period for African people everywhere.
Research which was done in the Congo in the 1980s, and frankly, there were peasants who said they were wondering when this thing called independence is going to come to an end. Because
yes,
before independence, they had neighborhood stores where they could have unfettered access to soap, sugar, and you name it.
That's true. So, yes, Leopold II did very bad things in the Congo. But again, as I said, it lasted some 15 years. His nephew, Albert, came, and they tried to change the image. And I think he did a lot of good things. Albert II, and then his son, Leopold III, and then Baudouin Premier. So, Belgium, they only did bad things in Congo.
What kind of person was Mobutu? Because when you talk to a lot of his critics, of course, frankly, they don't give him any credit. And yet you find some areas in this book that deserve, you know, that where he deserves credit.
This book was written to show that power corrupts, mm-hmm, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Dr. Close and I, we have seen two Mobutus.
Mm-hmm.
Two.
Yes.
Mobutu.
The first one?
The first one,
mm-hmm,
from 1965 to, I would say, 1974-5. And then Mobutu, second, from 1975-80 to his demise in 1997. What really didn't work with Mobutu was because he stayed too long in power. And he was not aware of this very, very simple fact that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Had he stepped down in 1970, Mobutu would have passed in history as the father of Congo, of Zaire.
But how do you respond to some African leaders who say staying in power for a long time is a good thing because it makes them good governors? They gain experience and they become champions in governance.
I still want to see examples of that.
Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni is on record saying that.
Okay.
Do you dispute that?
I tend to.
I see. Mm-hmm. Why?
Because I still want to see a human person who is drinking whiskey, 2-3 bottles of whiskey, and staying sober. I've not seen that yet, but it can come one day. So power is like alcohol. Power is like heroin or morphine. Yes, you can take a little of that, but too much is not, cannot do good.
I am told that I have to go for a break. A reminder that you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. If you wish to participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please, don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook. Keywords, Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gizie Ewart. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Well, we are back, of course. What about back around the 1984-85, when you had the scourge of AIDS? And you, in fact, I think you were introduced to President Mobutu by the health minister, and you suggested that you needed to get permission from the head of state so that you could begin to somehow figure out a way of putting the message across that AIDS was a real thing and it was in fact killing people. What about that time?
It was very hard, but that was a very difficult message to sell to Mobutu, who didn't want his country to be associated with something that's shameful. So we had to come out with a strategy. And the way, knowing Mobutu, and we use his, what do you call it, his, we try to play his game, by telling him that if he allows us to educate our population on AIDS, he's going to be the first African president to do that. And his name is going to stay in history, being the first president to do that. And two, it's going to stop the AIDS. All the presidents are going to say the same thing, but later on. And three, AIDS, yes, was being transmitted through sexual intercourse. But we said, yeah, but it's not a shame to have a disease that you contract by through sex. Because if you contract something by through sex, that means you are in good health. You can have. So he laughed, and because of that, he said, yes.
But initially, he did not believe that AIDS was a heterosexual disease.
Yeah.
Because he even gave an example of somebody
He gave an example of one of his friends or collaborators who was very, very, let's say promiscuous. Why didn't
he said if that was true, that particular gentleman should be history.
Yes. And then, I told him that, yes, unfortunately,
his machinery.
The machinery
is dead.
Stopped working for some time.
And how did he react?
And then he laughed, and then they said, okay,
go for
doctor,
it.
Go for it.
And then, of course, Franco Rwambayamakiadi, better known as, one of Africa's arguably great musicians at the time.
This is a person that we owe a lot of credit for stopping AIDS in Congo.
In Congo,
because he made this song while he was affected.
Yes,
and he knew that he was going to.
Ironically, he died of the same.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he had the courage to do the.
That is like,
and then the song had a very, very huge impact, not only in Zaire, but also in the neighboring countries.
That is the Ugandan musician Phil Rutaya in Sweden, who also had the disease, but in fact did a great job, really, to mobilize support against the disease. I gather that we have a lifeline to the show, which are the telephone callers. Let's go to Tafa in Ghana. Good evening, Tafa. You're most welcome straight to Talk Africa.
Hello, good evening, Shaka.
Terrific, how are you today?
Shaka, I'm good. What I got your guest in the studio.
Thank you. What's your question, Tafa?
Thank you very much. Shaka, I heard your guests alluded to the fact that he came to Afulawu between Ghana and Togo, and the situation was very, very bad. I agree with him, Shaka. But my question is that, is it not politicians, the same Africans, who created that kind of just suspicious against our own people? Why should the Ghanaian or Togolese find it very difficult to cross in one country? Is it not them? And secondly, we always want to blame colonialists. Where are our former colonial masters? They are no more in Africa. So don't they think that it is time for us to stop this mentioning colonial boundaries? Because they are no more in Africa. Let's blame those politicians who have suspicious of other countries. That's why we are facing this kind of artificial boundaries. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Tafa. That's very interesting, especially given, frankly, that there are some places where you find one house. The living room is, for example, in Ghana, and the dining hall is in Togo.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with my brother from Ghana, and I was really shocked. Because you are talking about the border between Ghana and Togo pass through an ethnic group, the Ewe, so you have some Ewe's are Togolese, other Ewe's are Ghanaians.
Right.
I don't have any problem with that, but that should not be an excuse to put barriers between those people, the same family, same people. My uncle is from the other part of the road. Why can I go and
you have the same situation on the Kenyan-Ugandan border, the Ugandan-South Sudanese border, Ugandan-Congolese border. In fact, my maternal parents shared a compound with the Congolese. They were just interacting. One family was Congolese, the other was Ugandan. Can you believe that? Very interesting. Let's go to Nigeria. Good evening, Patrick. You're most welcome straight to Talk Africa.
Good evening, Mr. Shaka. Good evening, Doc Odunga. Now, my question to Doc on the studio, that today, Africa is facing problem of seat tight in the office. Not only that, nationalism, religion, and coupled with colonial masters, destruction of our norms and values. Doug, I want to find out, are we saying that what we are facing today is the second coming of Mobutu's legacy based on the prologue of the book? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Patrick Okrafo in Ajuku here in Nigeria.
Thank you. Let's go to Sam from Uganda. Good evening, Sam. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Mushaka. How are you?
Terrific. You have a minute, please.
Dr. Malongo, what happened to the relationship between the Mobutu and the international community? He used to be referred to as the beacon of hope and the blue-eyed president at that time by UT and other countries. What advice do you give to present African and other press leaders in the world to desist from egocentric and dictatorial tendency? Thank you, Shaka. And what's your take, Dr. Malongo?
What about that? He says that Mobutu at one time, the West regarded him as the beacon of hope for African democracy. But eventually, of course, according to this book, he becomes, in their view, a pariah.
A pariah, yeah, because fortunately, Mobutu didn't play well. He didn't play well with the opportunity he was given. As I said, Mobutu, the first Mobutu was really a hope because he took a country. Let's not forget that when he became president of Congo in 1965, the country was torn into pieces. And then he brought all the Congolese together. And if you go to Congo, that's the only thing that people really thank him for creating the nationalism, that you go from east to north to south, west. Congolese around the field that they are Congolese.
Was that when he introduced the policy of authenticity?
Yeah, when he introduced the policy of
authenticity.
And then he started moving civil servants from west to north. And people started Now, if you go to Congo now, you have at least 10% of Congolese who have parents from different ethnic groups. But so that's a good thing. Unfortunately, as I said, he stayed too long. Had he stepped down after 10 years of power, of absolute power, again, I would say Congolese will have a very good memory of him. The mistake he made was to stay in power too long.
What about the author saying that there were two very influential ladies, female, in his life?
Yeah.
His mother, Mama Yemo.
Yes.
And his first wife, Marie Antoinette Mobutu.
Yeah. Now
those two ladies, when they died, that seemed frankly to be the beginning of his end.
You know,
the other person that he listened to was Dr. Close himself.
When I say power corrupts, but you can also have some mechanism to alleviate the consequence of, like in the United States, you have the Congress. The president doesn't have
checks and balances.
You have checks and balance.
Yeah.
In the pre-colonial Africa, we have also chiefs, but we had designed mechanism of check and balance. You have the council, like but. With the new president, the post-independence president, they don't have this. They've chopped all these mechanisms of balance and check and balance.
Mobutu's last words to his son was, "You must love your people. You must love your people because you are beginning to look like a foreigner."
Mobutu unfortunately lost the tiny checks and balance that he had with the death of his mother
and
his first wife,
Marie Antoinette.
When these people went, the power became really absolute.
That was the beginning of the end, and of course he had was it Morimoto, whatever, Baramoto. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guest, Dr. Malongo Mia Tudla, a protege of Dr. William Close and senior public health specialist, international consultant. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not beta, Democratic Republic of the Congo. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.